right.
That's true. It is true. This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. And today, my co-host, again, coming out of retirement, is Mr. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. Are you there, Ben?
I am there. I am here in the heart of the Rust Belt in central Ohio.
And our guest for the first half hour, or the first hour today, is Daniel Larimer from BitShares. Are you there, Daniel?
I am here, coming in from Virginia.
Cool. Everyone's connected by the tin cans held aloft with carrier pigeons, and we're really happy to have Daniel back on. Daniel was on the other night at, 4 in the morning or something, but we're having him on the prime time Sunday afternoon, driving to or from church, driving from church to the VFW show and to the VFW family picnic in the afternoon. Daniel is the inventor of BitShares. You can go to bitshares.org, B-I-T-S-H-A-R-E-S, yes, that's correct, .org, bitshares.org. So, Daniel, what is BitShares?
BitShares does for business what Bitcoin did for money.
That sounds good. Bitcoin, in case anyone listening doesn't know, is a decentralized, would you say currency?
I would actually call Bitcoin a crypto equity. It can be used as a currency, and that's what it's used for, but it's kind of like a stock.
Yeah. Yeah, the government thinks that Bitcoin is magical internet money for buying drugs, but it's far more than that. And BitShares is far more than Bitcoin. So tell us what BitShares is and how it's different from Bitcoin.
BitShares takes the idea of Bitcoin, which is really just a global transaction ledger to track who owns what. And we recognize that Bitcoin is, when viewed as a company, is losing $500 million a year. So what we do is we take Bitcoin and we make it profitable by allowing the same software to earn more money from transaction fees than it has in expenses.
The same type of software.
Same type of software. Yeah. This is entirely new software, entirely new transaction ledgers. Our goal is to reduce the barrier to entry to allow increased competition in the cryptocurrency space, or as I call it, the crypto equity space.
So it's not the Bitcoin blockchain.
That is correct. These are not the Bitcoin blockchain. These are entirely new blockchains, because the Bitcoin blockchain, its transaction ledger, is secured in a way that it's too expensive and not profitable.
How does Bitcoin lose money?
Anytime a company has to issue new shares to pay for services, that's considered an expense on the company's books. So what Bitcoin does is every 10 minutes, it's issuing new shares, coins, to the miners, the people who are buying hardware and consuming all this electricity looking for magic numbers.
Okay, so that's a pretty good explanation for the layman of what Bitcoin is and a little bit on how BitShares is different. I want to go a little deeper into both. Now, if you were explaining Bitcoin, which I know is not your product, yours is BitShares, but some people have never even used Bitcoin. I mean, I explained it to my 93-year-old father by saying, you know, it's basically a way to email money. That's not entirely true or accurate, but it's the closest thing that I can use to tell somebody who can barely use a computer. Now, how would you extrapolate on that for what Bitcoin is for someone who's not a computer power user, and then do the same for BitShares?
Bitcoin is like a penny stock, and it's being used as money. If you had stock certificates and you were to trade them with your friends or family in physical form, you could use that as money. Bitcoin is a digital version of those stock certificates, secured by cryptography and hosted on computers around the world. That's how I tend to describe Bitcoin, because people understand what companies are, why they have value, and what it means to trade in them.
And explain what you mean by cryptography.
Cryptography is a mathematical process of proving in a way that can't be forged that you own something.
So it's like it's encrypted. It's explain that even simpler.
It's, you know, a secret that no one else knows, and using that secret, you can perform the mathematical proofs that you sign something.
Sort of like, you know, your password when you log into something, but not breakable.
Exactly. A password is, once someone has your password, they have your identity, they can log in, they can impersonate you. This is a next generation password that serves the same purpose, except what, you don't give someone the password, you give them a proof.
So how does Bitcoin prevent double spending? What is double spending, and how does BitShares prevent double spending?
Double spending is the concept that you have a giant transaction ledger, and you want to make sure that it always adds up to zero, or it always balances out in the end. A double spend is an attempt to spend the same money to two different people, which would effectively print money or create money from nothing. Bitcoin prevents that by having this global ledger and using a concept called proof of work. And it's makes it so that it's economically infeasible to produce a longer ledger. We use a similar concept, except instead of, I guess I like to call it digging holes and filling it back in to secure your network. We have the shareholders, because we view them as shareholders, vote through their representatives on certifying what the longest transaction ledger is.
Ben, do you have any follow-ups?
Yeah. In reference to the blockchain, what, for people who don't know, how would you explain what a blockchain is?
I would explain the blockchain as a notebook of transactions. Each block is a page in the notebook, and as you add pages to notebook, as people make more and more transactions, you get the complete history of ownership in the company.
Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I was going to say, and the secure aspect of that is that it's not on one computer. It's on millions of computers around the world that all cross-check with each other to make sure that they all have the same information, right?
Well, there's two aspects that are securing it. One is it is redundant on all these other computers. And the second is that each page in the ledger references the previous pages. And so if you change anything anywhere in the ledger, all subsequent pages also have to be changed, or you can prove that it's invalid. So and it's really a concrete ledger. It's cast in stone, can't be changed.
And it's not really in any way completely anonymous. Like the people who try to attack this form of currency or whatever that we want to classify it as, they say, well, it's an anonymous way that people can buy drugs, and that's usually the way that they attack it. But it's not anonymous. I mean, you can buy all kinds of things with it, with Bitcoin at least. But it's not truly anonymous. There are ways to track through every transaction and look and see where the Bitcoin went, and that's part of the secure aspects of it, right?
Because it is a global ledger, you can see every transaction, where it came from, where it went to. The one thing you can't see is who owns the addresses. Now, that gives you some degree of privacy, but sophisticated network analysis allows certain people to analyze the chain and identify who you are with just a few data points.
I would say that $100 bills are more anonymous than Bitcoin. Would you agree?
I think it's all in how you use it. I can use Bitcoin to remain perfectly anonymous, but the average person can't.
How would you do that?
You do that by never using the same Bitcoin address more than once and never having two or more addresses in the single transaction.
Would a VPN help too?
It could help if people are tracking where the transaction comes from, so it could help you from the NSA perspective.
Now, how does BitShares expand on that? The pseudo anonymity, does it make it more close? Does it make, are you closer to anonymous?
Yes, we take the concept of, it's called a hierarchical wallet, but that's a technical term. We automate the process of using Bitcoin in a more secure manner.
Do you think that BitShares could help make governments obsolete in any way?
I believe that the key component behind Bitcoin and BitShares is decentralized distributed consensus in a form that does not rely on force or top-down centralization. So government is a form of centralized consensus. Bitcoin's decentralized consensus. End result is, I believe that these technologies have the potential to make government irrelevant.
You came into Liberty through the Ron Paul movement, right? And then kind of went past that?
Yeah, I started on a journey to find out the truth in everything, and it started with Ron Paul and then went beyond him.
The truth in everything. I like that. What made you Did you become disillusioned with Ron Paul or with that working through the system or what and how?
Well, Ron Paul is a great guy, but he's too statist for me.
We say he's our favorite government thug.
And, yes.
And he's no longer a government thug, so we like him even more now.
Yes, he's a great guy. I just disagree that minimal government is possible. I think it's a contradiction of terms.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about BitShares before we go to the break. We've got about 2 minutes.
The idea of BitShares is that we can create business models and encode them into the blockchain. So whereas everyone else in the industry is trying to create cryptocurrencies, we actually can build businesses, whether they're a bank, an exchange, an insurance company, solving domain name squatting, or lotteries, bingo. There's all kinds of these businesses that we can encode the business model into the blockchain and operate in an entirely decentralized, transparent, and trust-free way.
So you're basically making a new blockchain for each business or each type of business?
Exactly. And we provide the toolkit to allow other entrepreneurs to start their own businesses.
And would this blockchain contain everything in a business, like the payments coming in, the payments going out, billing, taxes, things like that?
Yes, the entire business model can be encoded into the blockchain. Although we try to create what we call sovereign businesses, which means that they don't depend upon any particular nation.
They run on their own.
That is correct.
Give me an example of how that would work.
Well, a blockchain is sovereign over the contents of its chain. As long as you don't depend upon any outside resources, or we can get back to it in greater details, but it controls its own information.
Cool. This is Freedom Fiends. We'll be back with more with Daniel Larimer from BitShares.org after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This is the Central Scrutinizer.
I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to
spy on you and
keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially
do not want you to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
This is the Freedom Fiends. You know that video that went viral of the dog attacking the four-year-old boy and then the cat running up and attacking the dog and chasing it off? Okay, you, the listener, are the little boy. I'm not saying you're like a kid, but, you know, in this analogy, you guys are the little kid. The government is the dog, and the Freedom Fiends is the cat that chases off the dog. And to that end, today we're doing an interview with Daniel Larimer from BitShares. Daniel, tell me about BitShares X.
BitShares X is a decentralized bank and exchange. And what I mean by bank is it allows you to have deposits denominated in gold, silver, dollars, oil, and to trade among those in a completely decentralized exchange. It is the world's first 200% reserve gold bank.
Explain that more.
If you think about what a bank is, it's just a giant transaction ledger. It's got shareholders.
With armed guards.
Yes, armed guards.
And government regulation.
Yes, a heavily regulated industry with a large number of barriers to entry. But if you look at how banks actually operate, we can create dollars the same way banks create dollars. You lend them into existence based on collateral. And before the break, we were talking about how these companies are sovereign over their blockchain. The one thing these companies are sovereign over is the shares in the company itself. So I can lend dollars, or these decentralized banks can lend dollars into existence using the shares in the bank as the collateral. This is compared to the banks today, which use your house as collateral. But otherwise, the mechanism is the same.
Is that out? Is that ready?
We've done some initial testing with it earlier this year. We will be rapidly developing and releasing that in the months ahead. It's not out right now.
Okay. And what is the BitShares toolkit?
The BitShares toolkit is a software library that allows software developers to have a foundation upon which they can build their decentralized business models.
When is that coming out? That's actually in existence, right? But not ready for prime time, but will be soon.
Right. That's in existence right now. There are many people working on it. We've got about a dozen people working on it right now, and anyone can get involved. It's entirely open source.
Cool. Well, how could people get involved if they want to, I don't know if invest is the word, but contribute and get involved in BitShares?
If you'd like to contribute to our cause, which our cause is finding free market solutions to secure the life, liberty, and property for all, then you can give to our project. You can visit bitshares.org to learn more about Angel Shares. You can also buy ProtoShares or BitShares PTS, which is a Bitcoin clone. And both of these systems are a way to get involved and to get recognized in the founding of new companies.
Excellent. Excellent. And what does the rest of the summer hold for you?
This summer, we have a summer of code where we are working with all of our developers in one location, bringing them in from all over the world. And we are going to be cranking out a lot of new decentralized businesses.
In Virginia, right?
In Virginia, yes, at Virginia Tech.
In Blacksburg, yep. Yep, I like Virginia. It's really pretty this time of year. What's the weather like there right now?
Oh, it's a cool 60 degrees and beautiful.
In the mountains, nice.
Yes.
Nice. Excellent. Well, we're going to have you stay around for the next half hour, too, and we're going to talk about the future in general. And I'm not going to use the word futurism because that scares a lot of folks. They go, wait, that seems strange and unusual and scary. But, you know, there's a lot of good things coming down the pipe, and you're going to help build them, and you and your crew are going to help build them. And I also want your thoughts on just in general where things are going to go. You willing to do that?
Yeah, we're in the business of innovating freedom, creating technological solutions to secure our freedom instead of asking the government for it.
Yeah, I like that as a tactic. And in the second hour, Ben and I are going to talk about people asking for permission to be free from their slaveholders and why that's not really the best way to go about it. It just doesn't seem to make sense to me. You know, they'll give you a little bit and say, yes, see, we gave you a little bit, but behind your back, they'll be doing a whole bunch more stuff. And, you know, I really think that's a broken old model that if it ever had any relevance at all, it's kind of like the appendix. It's a vestigial organ that usually causes infection for the host and needs to be removed. And not with any kind of violence, but rather with this surgery of new technology and new ideas and new ways of looking at things. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends after we sell you some things and ideas for Bitcoin, Federal Reserve notes, gold and silver.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Have you ever wanted to move to the land of LibPair? Libertarian paradise, where there's fun for everyone that doesn't initiate force on others, fun for the kids, parties for the adults, buy and sell in silver or Bitcoin, scenic hikes and gun shoots, speeches to educate us all. The Porcupine Freedom Festival is LibPair in the White Mountains of New Hampshire for a week this summer, June 22nd to 29th. Get your tickets now before there's no more room. Porkfest, the event of a lifetime. Porkfest.com. That's PORCFEST.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, bringing you the best in cutting-edge weirdness. And we got Daniel Lerner here from BitShares.org. Daniel has been quoted as saying that blockchain technology will create a global brain. You like how I did that, Daniel?
I do.
You've been quoted as saying it because you said it to me about 2 minutes ago in passing. And I'm one of the things I'm doing helping BitShares is like, these guys just spew brilliance all day long, but sometimes there's like one thing in the middle of something that's more brilliant than the other, and I just pull it out of the pile and set it aside. So, because you guys, I don't think you guys realize how many quotable things you have in an hour of speech that are great, but they're kind of in the middle there somewhere. So here's the quotable of the day. Daniel Lerner, you've been quoted as saying that blockchain technology will create a global brain. Please explain.
Well, the free market is a way of coordinating the actions and allocation of resources among all mankind. With blockchain technology, we have lowered the barriers to entry and allow the creation of prediction markets, which allows us to price anything. You can view a prediction market as a neuron in your brain, which taking inputs and from people with information all over the world and aggregating all that information into a price. And that price can then be hooked up to other prices and so on and so forth. So the end result of blockchain technology and decentralized markets is more accurate and true representation of information that can then be interconnected to reveal things that we could never discover before. What's the value of land on the moon? We can discover that kind of thing in a decentralized prediction market.
So it sounds to me, my layman's understanding of it is it sounds something like the New York Stock Exchange, but not hidden and not open to corruption and manipulation behind the scenes because everything's open. Is that correct?
Everything's open and there are no regulations preventing the creation of markets. Generally speaking, prediction markets are heavily regulated because they're a tool of power for the people. And the government doesn't like tools that give the people power.
Yeah, they sure don't. What do you think the government's reaction to BitShares is going to be? Or not the government, any government?
Well, it's going to be mixed. They don't know how to interpret it. They're learning it just like the rest of us. But where I'm going from it is all we're creating is advanced accounting software that provides transparency, integrity, and irreversibility to corporate accounting. It's so effective, in fact, that you no longer even need to trust any centralized corporate agents that can be entirely decentralized. But you could indeed use this technology to bring transparency and integrity to the banking system and do so in a way that entirely complies with any law the government passes.
Governments really don't want integrity in banking systems, that's for sure. I just thought of an analogy you probably would not like for pitching to investors. But, they're still trying to figure out – governments are still trying to figure out what to do with Bitcoin and trying to ban or regulate various aspects of it. I could see BitShares as kind of a designer drug reaction to that. You know how like when governments outlaw one drug, underground chemists will, add one atom to the molecule and make it a new drug that's not yet banned. That could be done with new blockchains. But generally what they end up doing is just banning whole classes of things. Do you see that possible?
Well, I've used a similar analogy. If you create systems that are profitable, profit is like a drug. The free market will find a way to get it out there, and it will continue to grow and thrive in the real economy.
Yeah, and I think what I really think that it was kind of interesting to me that they had that congressional subcommittee hearing on Bitcoin and came away from it with kind of happy thoughts about it, which, sounded like a good deal at the time. It sounded like, oh, the government's not only not going to ban it, they're in favor of it. But I think it was just kind of like, how when parents have an unruly child and then that they can't control in any way. So they end up saying, oh, we just let him do whatever he wants, because it looks better than saying we can't control him.
There's probably some truth to that.
You're laughing. Yeah, it's a good one. So what do you see for the future in general? Give me a few thoughts on various technologies outside of blockchain and how you think things are going to blockchains and how you think things are going to be different in 10 or 20 years in general with technology and with freedom.
I think that the power of the internet and communication is going to cause the entire world to become a small town. That reputation systems built around cryptography will allow us to move into what I call a post-contract society, which a lot of libertarians say, hey, wait, everything's based on contracts. And I say, yes, but contracts are also the back door for allowing government to enter our lives. At the core of backing most contracts is the concept that if you don't do what you say you're going to do, the government's going to come in and enforce it on you.
Well, there's also the idea of escrows of, two people could say, we have a contract, this third trusted person holds the money and will act according to the contract or resolve disputes.
Yes, escrow systems are a perfect example, except that you also don't have any contracts with the escrow agent. They could run away with your money, but they don't because it's in their best interest from a business perspective not to do it. So no party is operating under the compulsion to take any action, and yet they will continue to do what is in the best interest, most integrity, honest thing to do because it's in their business interest to do so, rather than because some government is going to force them to do it or get thrown in jail.
So are you talking about using blockchain technology, BitShares, different DAX in BitShares as a post-escrow thing where basically the blockchain does the payout based on various inputs that happen naturally?
I believe that there's a combination of blockchain technology and just ways for humans to interact. If we want to see a world where government is irrelevant, we've got to remove the government from our day-to-day transactions, which means that the reason why blockchains are successful is because you don't have to rely on the government to enforce transfers. It's irreversible, and there's a global consensus around it. We need to apply that same principle to everything. When we create a bank in exchange, we're removing the bid-ask contract, the options contract. There is no one that can enforce it and no one that can prevent it from happening. It just happens. There are ways that you can structure the legal system. I like to say that we've got a socialist justice system in this society because we are expecting others to pay in order to provide us security and put other people in prison. But we have to find a free market solution to these things, and I believe that if you've read some of the stuff I've posted online and other places, that we have the technology and that the internet will eventually get us there in the next 10 years.
Hey, Michael, can I jump in here with something?
Yes. Yes. You in the back with the beard. Go ahead, Ben.
Daniel, you hit something there that I've talked about a few times. And when I talk about that in real life to people, not just on the internet, I kind of see their eyes like gloss over. And clearly, you know, what I say just goes right past them because it's like I'm speaking in some foreign language. But you mentioned that the legal system and what we call justice and all that, currently the system that we utilize is a socialist system of justice, right?
That is correct.
Not only does everyone pay for the prosecution of some criminal, it often doesn't have any justice for the harmed. You know, it's like, yeah, they might throw the guy in jail, but you don't get paid back for the damage he did to you.
Exactly.
It's retribution instead of restitution.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's break it into an actual. So let's say a guy walks into a store and he pulls out a gun and he shoots the clerk, doesn't kill him, but he shoots him, takes the money, and then he takes off. And before he's caught, he spends the money. And then he's caught. And we don't even know for certain if the guy caught is the one who actually committed the crime, but he'll be picked up by the police, he'll be processed, then he'll be prosecuted, and if he's found guilty, he'll be punished, basically, by put in jail or whatever that they do to punish him. But none of those things are restorative to the damage that he did of the stealing of the money and the shooting of the clerk. There's no aspect of the current justice system that addresses the damages done to the business or the clerk. It's all about just punishing someone who is believed to have been the culprit.
It's even worse than that. What it's doing is you're saying that because I was harmed, I'm going to go steal money from somebody else who did nothing to me in order to track down, punish, and then imprison them for life.
Yeah, so all the other businesses that didn't get robbed and all the people, the citizens, the, you know, just people driving on roads and living their life have to pay for the punishment of this guy who is suspected of doing the deed. The guy never pays for his crime in anything other than punishment. He never actually restores the damage that he's done, and theft takes place in the form of the government forcing other people to feed this guy in a jail while he's being so-called, you know, facing justice, right?
Well, when I look at the analysis of it, I say, all right, well, let's assume that you're not allowed to steal from other people just as a moral principle. What does that mean? And you look at the cost of the current system and you realize, well, gosh, if I had to pay to be insured so that if I'm robbed, I can imprison someone for life, those insurance premiums are going to be far higher than your medical insurance. Not only that, but if you are liable for imprisoning the wrong person, your premiums are going to go up even more. Whereas right now, there is no liability in the event that you imprison the wrong person. Worst case scenario, you steal more money from more innocent people in order to make up for the person that you harmed.
You know, I asked Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy, where he thought government was going in the next few years. And he said that he thinks it's going to become more and more irrelevant and more people will see it. And it will respond by very occasionally doing something extremely public to overly punish somebody for something that's not even a crime. Do you agree with that?
I believe the government actors are insane and irrational and capable of doing anything.
How do the money people behind you feel when you talk like that? Do they worry that you're going to scare off investors? I love that you're the only guy doing a big blockchain system talking like that.
Well, most of our backing is from donations and not investors. So people are giving money to us for the cause rather than investing in us.
Cool. It's fascinating stuff. Daniel for BitShares.org. We'll be back with more after this trip to the market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's at the Circle Pines Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to miplc.org.
This is Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend. I'm an angry 50-year-old white male polishing my rifle. But you know what? Violence is not the answer. I just like keeping my rifle clean. So we're talking to Daniel Larimer from BitShares today. BitShares.org if you want more information. It is post-Bitcoin. It is the next generation. You know, I say that the internet, they always talk about internet 2.0 was when, the internet enabled you to talk to each other. And finally, you could talk back to the television set like a crazy person, which is how I kind of look at social networking. I said in the year 2000, I said, social networking provides websites for people who shouldn't be anywhere near the internet. But I'm just a curmudgeon, and we do want to expand the ability for humans, for the slaves to learn to read and talk to each other, which was illegal during slavery. It was illegal to teach the slaves to read. And really, the internet, what the internet does, it's groundbreaking, even the internet 1.0, is it allows the slaves to talk to each other, and it cuts down the barriers of mainstream media, of the idea of gatekeepers. There are no gatekeepers anymore, and they're trying to regulate that. They're trying to clamp down on it. Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein want to have a they said that they said the First Amendment should only apply to authorized journalists, which is ridiculous because, you don't need a license to have a printing press. This isn't Soviet Russia.
That's kind of like their First Amendment zones where you're allowed to have free speech within this, roped off area 4 blocks away from where you actually want to have your free speech.
Yeah. So, Daniel, do you know about something called Khan Academy, K-H-A-N Academy?
I've only looked at it as long as you've mentioned it to me.
Yeah, it's a open source free educational system. A lot of homeschoolers use it, and it's basically it was a guy who was real smart who was trying to teach math to his like 10-year-old nephews. So he made some YouTube videos, and they went viral. People loved him, and he started making more, and then he started taking donations, and then he got nonprofit status. And he basically – Khan Academy, K-H-A-N Academy, you can Google it. They have really solid video tutorials online on YouTube from like kindergarten through 12 through grad school for every subject. Basically, it replaces public school, it replaces private school, it replaces college, it replaces grad school, and it's free. And originally, the teachers union in America was really against it. They were like, no, you need a teacher there. And then finally, they realized like people were pulling their kids out of school and just homeschooling them with Khan Academy. And then they said, oh, wait, Khan Academy is a great boon to help teachers, you know, maximize their time with each student. So they started having it in class, which is basically ridiculous. Basically, what it is it threatens this old system, this Prussian system of having people show up for 12 years at the same place at the same time and sit in little compliant rows and memorize facts and not learn any logical thought and all learn at the same rate, which confuses slower students and bores smarter students. Were you bored in school, Daniel?
Incredibly so.
I used to cut class when I did okay in high school, but I flunked out of community college because I cut class to go to the library so I could actually learn something. Tell me a little bit about your public. Were you in public school or private school?
Combination. I was in public school going up to fifth grade, private school for fifth and sixth grade, and then public school thereafter. But I can tell you that my experience interviewing people is anyone who can get straight A's, I'm not too interested in. That means they can tolerate the system.
So when you do an interview for a programmer, do you ask them what their grades were, and you like them better if they got B's or C's?
Yeah, I'm a little bit suspicious if they get straight A's.
Yeah, so the way that Khan Academy was first rejected and condemned and then embraced by the old model of teaching, I'm wondering if that'll happen with BitShares, with government, where it'll originally say, this is horrible, it's out of control, it must be controlled, and then finally embrace it. Could you see that happening?
I see that happening, and I expect it to happen, because the way we are going to be marketing and promoting what we are doing is that we are creating transparent accounting software that eliminates fraud and does the job that the SEC and the government's trying to do.
Excellent.
We are creating solutions to prevent identity theft, give you control over your identity.
Yeah.
And all these things make government irrelevant. And so they're going to have to embrace it and use it or be seen for what they are.
Excellent. We'll be back with more with Daniel from BitShares.org. BitShares. After this trip to the free and open market.
Worms.
Looking for some summer fun in Wyoming? A camping weekend with liberty-minded folks for a barbecue, tubing on a river, a live band, and some quality trigger time? Then join us in Guernsey from May 29th to June 1st for the 2014 Free State Wyoming Jamboree. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, Free State Wyoming encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the Cowboy State. Bring your family to the Free State Wyoming Jamboree. For more details, visit freestatewyoming.org.
Freedom Fiends, hour two of our Sunday show. Good listening in the car on the way from church to Walmart. And this is Michael Dean, and we're talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. Are you there, Ben Stone?
Hey, Michael. Good to be on the radio with you.
Yeah. Ben came out of retirement for this weekend to do these two shows with me. And our guest is Daniel Larimer from BitShares. Are you there, Daniel?
I am. Thanks again.
Cool. So you mentioned what we're talking about is BitShares, which is Daniel's invention, which is kind of Bitcoin 2.0, people have called it. It's there are several things coming out now that take the groundbreaking idea of Bitcoin and expand on it in new ways. There's can we talk about how yours is different from some of those, like Ethereum, Made Safe, things like that?
Yeah, sure. The number one thing that sets us apart from the other systems out there is that we take Bitcoin and we make it profitable. The core premise being that we need to produce more value than we consume, that we earn more from transaction fees than we pay to operate the network.
Can you expand on that?
Yeah. Well, gosh, where do you get it? BitShares does for business what Bitcoin did for money. And, okay. And the idea is that what Bitcoin did for money is it made it transparent, irreversible, and trustless. And we're doing the same thing for business.
Explain the word trustless, because that sounds like a bad thing, but it's actually a good thing. What is a trustless system?
Trustless means you don't need to trust anyone. You can trust the system rather than the people.
You don't need a you don't need a third party. You know, there's a saying I always thought was kind of snippy, but I always kind of like it when you're talking to a friend and someone comes up and tries to join the conversation, and you know, one of the two people that were originally talking says, "This is an A to B conversation. You can see your way out of it," which is really rude. But when you think about it, it's worth being rude in a lot of those situations, because a lot of that is like governments coming in and trying to regulate and tax something that there's no reason there needs to be a third party involved in, and they're not adding anything. They're just trying to, you know, they're being the mafia. They're just hitting you over the head or threatening you to and taking a cut. You know, an example is in Wyoming, you can have a yard sale. I like saying this because it's kind of macho libertarian flash. It's shocking to a lot of people, but literally you can buy guns at garage sales in Wyoming, and I've done it. You can buy guns, you can buy ammo without a permit, without a background check, anything. You can drive around on Sundays here and you can buy, you know, AR-15s and AK-47s. I mean, that's kind of rare to find something that cool, but you know, a friend of mine bought a shotgun. I've bought ammo at a garage sale, and that's mind blowing to most people in most states. Like, what? Really? But you can do it here. But to have a garage sale here in this town in Casper, you have to pay $5 to the city and get a permit. Why? Why do you have to pay $5 to get a permit to sell something privately to private individuals on your own property? You know, that's an A to B conversation. The government needs to see their way out of it. How can BitShares enable people to have, you know, and the government saying, well, you know, it's for the protection of the buyer and seller. You know, we have to know who's having a garage sale. No, you don't. That's done with trust between the people. Now, Obama is proposing a sort of an online license for the internet. Have you heard about this?
I have heard about it.
Yeah, and it's basically they're saying it's for the safety. Think of the children, which is always what they sell tyranny with any government worldwide throughout history. You know, they either do it with fear or a promise of safety, which is basically they put some fear in you and then promise to save you from it. So how would BitShares technology, and in particular the Quixote key system, eliminate the need and do it much better and more securely and privately than what the White House is proposing?
When we first introduced the concept of Quixote, we said we allow you to own your identity. Right now, your identity is owned by the government or your ISP or Google. Whoever controls your email address can impersonate you online. And with what Obama's proposing, he is effectively trying to make sure they continue to own your identity even on the internet. But what you really want is a system where your identity is based on a secret that only you know and a reputation that's accrued to your secret or your identity. And you can use that to do business with everyone without having to trust them, without having to have a central issuer like the government grant all the identities.
Yeah, and I want to expand on explaining why I think this is a good idea, because I think a lot of people who are into liberty and freedom and privacy have been talking for, I mean, I was saying in 1996, the government is probably reading every email or at least saving them until they have time to have better computers, faster computers to search through all of them. People thought I was crazy. I was saying on this show a year before anyone knew who Edward Snowden was, you know, the government is definitely reading every email or keeping every email and every phone call. And people said I was crazy. You know, literally, like, I looked up Edward Snowden's age. I was telling people that the government, you know, in media, on the internet, and on, it was before I was on radio, it was on, you know, I was basically doing podcasts before there were podcasts, before there were RSS feeds. In, you know, in 96, I was recording short little MP3s when everyone was on dial-up, and I was on, I actually had DSL in 96 because I lived in San Francisco and I lived within a thousand feet of a phone company. So I was one of the first small percentage of people who had it. And, you know, I was like uploading little rants, like 5-minute rants on, you know, 32K MP3s and uploading them to my website and telling people to download them. And they did. And I said in there in 96, you know, the government's probably reading everyone's email. And at that time, Edward Snowden was 13 years old. So, you know, I'm not a pioneer with this, but I'm just pointing out that I was saying it and people were calling me crazy. And when it came out that it was definitely true, you know, some of the people who said I was crazy said, well, if you don't have anything to hide, you shouldn't worry about it. And other people said, well, it's good. They have to, you know, they have to stop the terrorists. You know, they buy the line that the government gives them. So a lot of people who are into privacy and have been for as long as I have, or nearly as long, have a lot of fear of computers, although most of them are on the internet complaining about the government all day long anyway now, even the people who are kind of technophobes. But I think we have to reiterate why a provable worldwide global identity is not a mark of the beast. It's not a UN plot. It can be done privately, and why it's very important, because everybody who's into privacy understands that while privacy is a good thing, reputation is also important, because you can't buy or sell with anybody, you know, face to face without having a reputation. They're not going to trust you for it, or, you know, they're not going to lend you or let you pay them in installments or hire you for work. And there's a lot of things with that deal with reputation now that I think would replace a lot of what governments do. Like, you know, I think Angie's List and the Better Business Bureau, which is private, and Underwriters Laboratories, I think all of those things could you know, replace any believed, perceived need of anything like the Federal Trade Commission. Do you agree?
I think the key to all these things is ease of use. When it comes to privacy, that's a genie that you can't get back in the bottle. It's out there. So the best thing we can do is hope for complete transparency, so that instead of the government being able to analyze our social networks, we can analyze theirs.
Yeah, and you know, Joe Biden, when he was a senator in like 91 or 92, before most people were on the internet and before there was a World Wide Web, tried to outlaw citizens using encryption. And, you know, if you think Obama's cool and, you know, you're one of these people who think, oh, well, he's not like George Bush. He's exactly like George Bush. He's just, you know, hipper and talks more smoothly. But, you know, his second in command there, Joe Biden, tried to outlaw encryption. If that had happened, Bitcoin would be illegal. You actually chatted with Satoshi, the creator of Bitcoin, on Bitcoin Talk Forum at one point. Right, Daniel?
Yeah, I got into Bitcoin very early because I was trying to invent Bitcoin when I Googled digital currency, and I discovered Bitcoin in its infancy, back when you could still mine it with your computer. And I got on there and I said, well, we can use this for creating other applications like gold notes and silver notes and things like that. And so I exchanged a few exchanges with Satoshi about various things, and as he was helping teach me more about how his system worked, and it was a really interesting discussion.
Cool. Yeah, it was not hundreds of personal emails. It was a few exchanges on a forum, but it's kind of interesting because a lot of people conjecture about that guy in a kind of mythical, mystical way, and you actually chatted with him.
Yeah, I didn't even realize I had done it until someone else pointed out, hey, you talked with Satoshi. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I did do that.
I mean, it's kind of like telling a Catholic, hey, you know that guy you went drinking with a few years ago? He's the Pope now, you know, or something like that.
Exactly.
But, yeah, and I actually did a post a couple months ago before I'd heard of BitShares I was trying to invent BitShares, basically. You just read that in the break.
Exactly. Yeah. There are so many things that we can use this technology for. And the key thing is all about transparency, irreversibility, integrity. And we have the technology now that with the internet and with cryptography, that we can have real identities, real reputations, real irreversible transactions, and a whole new social order based upon voluntary interaction instead of based upon force.
I like that. So tell me more about how the identity thing works and the Quixote thing.
Well, identity is kind of a much bigger picture. If you've heard of Namecoin is an identity system of sorts. It allows you to look up web pages with a certain extension. The idea is that there has to be an easy-to-use way to refer to someone that's globally unique. And then once you have that handle, whether it's a domain name or a username, you can start using it to attach other information, feedback. If you're going to, if someone's harmed you in some way, you can file a complaint, go to arbitration, and track all those type of things, all attached to your identity. It's kind of like eBay feedback, only global and accessible on every website you go to. It's instead of having a million usernames for all the different websites you use and entering passwords everywhere, you have one identity that you can sign on everywhere without giving anyone your password.
And it does not involve Obama. It does not involve the White House. And it does the opposite in a good way of what the White House is suggesting. We'll be back with more with Daniel Lermers from BitShares. You can go to bitshares.org to read more after this trip to the market.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com. Yeah. And that music is my band Bomb from 1991 from our Warner Brothers record Hate Fed Love, going all the way back to 1991.
What are the lyrics that are being spoken right there?
Well, I love you so much that I wish you were dead or locked up down in some jail. Because if you were dead, you'd be underground and not squeaking under my friends. And the chorus is, I want to be your heroine, the one you'll always miss. I want to be your razor blade, the one to slit your wrist. Boy, that was some happy music back in my youth, but I'm better now. And a lot of that was just untreated alcoholism and drug addiction. And I'm coming up on 20 years sober July 7th. And I'm coming up on 50 years old this coming weekend, the whole weekend. I'm going to turn 50 twice, so I'll be 100. And we are still talking with Daniel Lermer here, but since this is going to be the definitive Daniel Lermer from BitShares interview ever, because his internet's working and because he's speaking in plain English for the common audience. That's me, the common audience. I don't get all this newfangled coding stuff. I always place the zeros in the wrong place and everything ends up wrong, like in the movie Office Space when I try to do it. So I was talking about addiction. there's something they told me when I got into recovery 20 years ago that doing the same things over and over and expecting different results is insanity. And it's really true. And it's very true of addiction. You know, people who, you try drinking just on weekends. You try not drinking on weekends. You try not drinking when you're happy. You try not drinking when you're sad. You try never drinking alone. You try only drinking alone. You move to a different city. If you're an alcoholic, you always end up drinking unless you deal with the underlying root of the cause. And I think there's a lot of analogies there with government, because I commend people and I salute people who don't like the government and want to go back to when America was good and want to restore the republic and restore the Constitution. But there's a lot of things wrong with that tack. And basically, the easiest way to say it is it's doing the same things over and over and expecting different results. Another way of saying it is you can't use government to fix bad government, because all government is immoral and it attracts loons and it attracts sociopaths. So, Ben, talk a little bit about Operation American Spring. What is that?
Ooh, Operation American Spring. Let me pop over to their website, and so that I don't get any quotes wrong or anything.
Well, there was an event recently where it was kind of a million militia march or million patriot march on Washington. And actually the numbers of people that showed up were somewhere between 150 and 300. And the people involved were very disappointed. It's kind of, I think it was influenced by the idea that Adam Kokesh had a while back. Wasn't his a million rifle march or something like that?
Yeah, I think he was had a little bit more conservative ideas on how many people would show up. I think he was hoping for 10,000 or something like that. And these people didn't even have, you know, one person said, how could a million people come in and march for this when, you know, only a couple thousand will even bother to click on a like on Facebook for it? But another headline read, literally, tens of people have descended upon Washington, D.C. So, you know, the numbers vary. One reporter could only find two people that he actually verified were a part of the Operation American Spring.
Well, yeah, because on the Washington Mall, I used to live in D.C., and on the Washington Mall, on a nice spring day, there were thousands of people milling around anyway.
Yeah, so it's really easy to just count a group of people without actually going over and finding out. And I think that's what some of the reports have done when they're saying 300 or 400. But the most realistic I found was about 100 to 150 people there.
Yeah, so Daniel Larimer is from BitShare. Daniel Larimer from BitShares. It's not plural. There's one of you. What do you think of the idea of petitioning government to be less like government?
Well, like you said at the beginning, it's doing the same thing, expecting different results. It's as Harry Brown said in How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, it's falling into the group trap. You're looking for solutions that involve getting other people to do something instead of changing yourself and doing things you're doing differently. And I think that this is actually a good sign that almost no one showed up, because it means most people are smart enough to realize that it's a pointless exercise.
Yeah. Harry Brown, wasn't he one of the co-founders of the Libertarian Party?
I believe he was.
Yeah. Were you ever involved in the Libertarian Party?
No, I skipped right beyond that.
Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Libertarian Party? I encountered those people in college in 1984. And even though I was, you know, into the idea of more freedom, they seemed like church to me. They were really kind of pushy. And I was like, you sound like church people to me. So I didn't get it. We'll be back with more after this trip to the free market, talking about the fallacy of trying to petition the government to act less like government, with Daniel Larimer from BitShares.org.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Brink of Freedom is a community-based network and magazine whose mission is to provide you with the information you need on your walk to freedom. From homesteading and gardening to tactical and firearms, Brink of Freedom provides everything you will need to gain the knowledge to be self-sufficient. If government doesn't like it, Brink of Freedom will cover it. Come share your knowledge and gain the knowledge of industry professionals within the community. Become a premium member and gain access to unlimited content and discounts on products and services from our merchants. Use the discount code FIENDS at brinkoffreedom.net.
This is the Freedom Fiends, talking to Daniel Larimer from BitShares. Ben Stone, my redneck friend with a beard, Ben Stone, my biker friend. Biker and redneck, those are not the same thing. But Ben, you're going to do a little radio comedy, I guess, or something? Go ahead, man.
Yeah, well, I was just going to make fun of the Operation American Spring, the folks trying to go down there and beg government to be a better government while they're claiming that the government is breaking the Constitution. And yet, if you analyze what they're asking the government to do, what they're doing and what they're asking the government to do would violate Section 1, Articles 2, 3, 8, and 10 of the Constitution. If government did what they demand, then government would be breaking the Constitution. But, you know, I kind of think of it in a sort of a way, like one redneck's talking to the other, and he says, "Hey, Clem, let's go down there to D.C. and force Congress to violate the Constitution by kicking out Obama, Biden, Reid, McConnell, Bonner, Pelosi, and Holden because they don't follow the part of the Constitution that we like." And his buddy says, "Wow, Cletus, that's the best idea you had since that time you tried to snowboard off in the roof of the barn in August.
That's racist. You're racist, Ben. That was racist.
That's okay.
Against white, rural
that.
White
I have,
people.
And, you I know, had a Kentucky driver's license, so I can do
we're
that.
We're all rural people here. And
I'm out in Floyd, Virginia, among a bunch of people just like that.
You know, I used to play in a band called the Beef People back in 83 that was probably more rural than where you are, Daniel. It was in Dyke, Virginia. You ever heard of Dyke, Virginia?
I have not.
So when I lived in Charlottesville, I was there was a band that came and played at a club where we had a punk rock show, and they were called the Beef People. And they were all juniors and seniors at a boarding school, boys boarding school out in Dyke, Virginia, called the Blue Ridge School. And the guitar player got kicked out of the band for having a girl in his room, sneaking a girl in on campus and making out with her. And they kicked him out, and they had a bunch of gigs booked, so I just learned all their songs on guitar and jumped in as a ringer, and then recorded an EP with them. And it was a lot of fun, man. It was a lot of fun. But Dyke, Virginia, I would venture to say is one of the more rural destinations, holiday destinations in Virginia. So, yeah, Daniel, tell me a little bit more about what you think about petitioning the Lord of Government with prayer to stop being the Lord of Government, and what you think other options that are better are.
Well, I think it's fruitless to try to change other people. You have to change yourself, and if you want to actually change the world, what I'm trying to do with BitShares and our technology is provide free market solutions to government problems. To solve these things through voluntary actions, I can take myself without having to ask anyone's permission to do it. And by pouring our energy into that, we'll get far more than pouring our energy into government. Because the reality is that if you go in there and you petition the government, even if you win, someone's going to come after you and petition the government to change it back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that people who want to get back to when America was good. First of all, when was that? It's like, you know, do you want to go back to smallpox, slavery, or, you know, which the Civil War? Which period do you want to go to? Because there really wasn't a period in America when there was more freedom. I would say, in general, there's probably more freedom for the average person in America now than there's ever been. I mean, I know for a fact. One thing that's always been important to me is ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be on radio, and I'm doing this radio show. You know, we're on 23 stations. For most of America, you know, radio's been around for 100 years. For most of America, I would get thrown in prison for saying the things I say daily on radio. Like literally, like in World War II, you know, they jailed people for criticizing the war. In Vietnam, you know, people got beat up for criticizing the war. Also,
one newspaper guy got thrown in jail for calling the president a fat guy, and that was President Madison.
Yeah, that was if you want to get back to when the Constitution was good, that was shortly after the ink was dry, and there were presidents throwing people in jail for free speech.
You know what? I think that was Adams. I don't think it was Madison. It was Adams.
Yeah, Adams was a skunk. Although his cousin, the other Adams.
Yeah, Sam.
Yeah, he was almost an anarchist. And there is a rumor that may have some historical basis to it that he actually fired the first shot of the American Revolution. You know, they always say, oh, they waited for the English because it was going to be a defensive war. But there's a theory that Sam Adams, Brewer Patriot sniper, was in a nearby boarding house on the second floor and actually took the first shot just to get things going, just to get the party started. And
I would say that government these days allows the appearance of freedom without giving the substance of freedom.
And exactly.
By allowing you to speak, that gives the appearance of freedom. But anyone who tries to start a business will recognize that you can't do anything. You have to ask permission for whether it's health care or business license, garage sales, lemonade stands. And that's just those simple things. Try to do anything in banking or food. Yeah, milking cows and selling the milk. You can't do anything in this country without asking for permission. But that only affects the handful of people that try to be entrepreneurs. And our whole school system and society is geared around teaching people to be employees. And so most people don't experience the lack of freedom that exists.
Excellent. Excellent point. Yeah, I've conjectured two things that I've gotten on record a few times. You know, I like to make predictions because if they come to pass, you look brilliant, and if they don't, no one remembers you said them. So one of the predictions I have is that they're not going to kick me off radio for free speech. That's not going to be the reason. It's going to be something more like, wait, you're running a radio show, and there's this we have this new FCC regulation that you have to pay everybody involved at least minimum wage, and you're not paying Ben minimum wage every day. So, you know, they'll use that to shut down the show. And I don't think they're going to shut down the Freedom Fiends website and seize the domain because it's, they won't say it's a free speech violation. They'll say, oh, you used a picture of Bart Simpson in a blog post 2 years ago. That's a copyright violation. You know, I think they'll find other ways to do it so they can still look like they're adhering to basic human rights.
They come and police stop and they find drugs on you.
Yeah,
exactly. Or what they've been shown to do is it appears as though that's what happens, but when in reality they have illegally found information some other way about you and then slipped that to a different agency.
Yeah,
exactly.
Reverse engineer the evidence or the probable cause.
Another thing to think of, just this year alone, within the liberty movement, I don't like using that phrase, but several prominent people have had either their Facebook page wiped out, their YouTube page wiped out. They've been purged from Google. They've been purged from YouTube. And all these things were under really questionable circumstances. And when they fought it, essentially the corporation involved gave a quick apology and put them back up again. And we're talking about like Stefan Molyneux, Adam Kokesh, Josie the Outlaw, Jeff Berwick, Mark Dice, all these people this year have faced that. And I'm wondering how that will take place with companies like Facebook and Google.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. Like, that's literally not technically a violation of your free speech in any legal sense or any other sense, because it is a private company and you click somewhere when you sign up and there's a bunch of legalese you don't read and you agree to it. So that's not really violating your free speech. But I've always said that people should build their presences on their own sites. I mean, I'm not even on Facebook and I'm barely on Twitter. I had 3,500 friends on Facebook and deleted my account because it was such a time suck. And that was before all the revelations came out about Edward Snowden. But, you know, here's my experience. Was there was a company called MP3.com. It came out in 1997 and I was like, oh, cool. I'm making MP3s and music and talking. And I built a whole presence on there, and I actually like printed business cards for my band that had our mp3.com URL. And, you know, I put a lot of work into it. And then they changed their terms of service, as it was their legal and moral right to do, overnight, and started charging to have a site on there. And it was like, hey, man, I built that, and you took that away. And it's their legal right to do that because it was probably buried in the legalese somewhere. But ever since then, that was a really early, you know, 1996, 1997 example for me that made me want to build all my stuff on my websites. And that's one thing that really attracted me to Namecoin, was it took it even further, because I've always seen the basic, weak link of having a web presence being that your .com, .org, .net, .uk, whatever, your .icann, domain name is under the control of the U.S. government or a government, and they can take it away whenever they want. So that's what really fascinated me about Namecoin. I think Namecoin has a lot of issues, and I think Daniel's dealing with some of those issues. Do you want to tell us really quickly what BitShares DNS does?
BitShares DNS that solves a similar problem. It tries to tie and allocate a globally unique name and point it to a website. And one of the things that people who try to build websites usually discover is that they want to pick a name and somebody's already reserved it. Not only did they reserve it, but they're not actually using it. And that's called domain name squatting. And that's actually a result of bad economics on the part of the government agencies that are selling domain names. They would do something called price fixing, which causes shortages. We try to solve those problems by, instead of selling everything for a fixed price, we auction them off. And that makes sure that they stay available. It improves the economic model. And it is also a way of maximizing the so-called profits in these decentralized systems that we're building.
And the auction proceeds aren't largely going to you. They're largely going to people who participate in the auction, right?
Right. This is a decentralized business with thousands of initial shareholders. And anyone who wants to get involved can buy some. It's like owning Bitcoin, where the proceeds go to the people who own Bitcoin.
Yeah, and the domain TLD, top level domain, is going to be .p2p. And Derek, who worked on Meowbit with me for Namecoin, is retrofitting Meowbit to work for .p2p in conjunction with Nikolai, who we've had on here before. And I think that that, in addition to your allocation strategy that reduces or eliminates the desire or profitability of people squatting, which I think was a huge problem with Namecoin. I think the other – there's three problems with Namecoin. One is that problem, the squatting problem. You know, there's 300,000 .bit domains and like, you know, 40 .bit websites, and I own 20 of them. And then there's a problem with just a lack of focus of the people involved with it. They're really, really brilliant, but I've compared them to Albert Einstein about how, you know, he'd go out in the snow with his socks on and forget to wear shoes. And the other one is it took 3 years of Namecoin being existing for there to be a way to the average person to view a .bit domain. And that's going to be solved with from day one with BitShares.dns. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
This is the final segment of today's Freedom Fiends talk radio musical extravaganza with Michael Dean, Ben Stone, coming out of retirement, coming out of his cave somewhere in Kentucky, and Daniel Lehrer from BitShares, which is you can look at bitshares.org to see more about it. And Daniel, you have been quoted as saying, you can't fight your way to freedom. You have to innovate your way to freedom. Talk about that.
Yeah, a lot of people try to petition the government to change things, to complain, to beg, to want to start violent revolutions. All those things are trying to solve the problem with the problem. And if you really want to find freedom, you've got to use innovative technologies to invent the solution. If you really believe that it is possible to have a free society based entirely upon voluntary collaboration, that initiating force is immoral and therefore unnecessary, that means there must be a voluntary solution that's so powerful that it can defend your freedom, protect your property against all aggressors, public and private. And the key is to not give up, not take shortcuts, and to find out what those solutions are and put them into place. And a large part of what we're doing at BitShares.org is solving pieces of that puzzle to give you control and make you sovereign over your money, to give you your identity, make sure you can own your names, make voting transparent and
And you're not provable. You're not talking necessarily about voting in a political system, although it could be used for that. But you know, in a corporate right. environment or a club or a group.
Right. Yeah. I personally don't believe that voting is a solid way of allocating resources because it violates the property rights of the losers. But if there are ways and places where voting or opinion polls, if anonymous opinion polls is what I like to call them, where it can be useful. And even if all you're doing is trying to prevent the media from distorting the perception of what the public thinks by having an alternative, transparent, audible way to basically, if the government's going to exist, at least keep them honest about what the people actually are saying. But all these things are baby steps in innovating freedom. And we have to just coordinate and work together. And so there's a lot of people out there that are trying different things. And Bitcoin is, you know, the Bitcoin cryptocurrency industry was started by a lot of people that had this mindset. But it's kind of grown. And now what you see in the Bitcoin industry is a lot of people that are begging for government regulation, that are supporting barriers to entry, that have the mindset of one blockchain to rule them all, whether it's Bitcoin with their sidecoin proposals of how to add extra things, anything that gives the miners, allows the miners to stay in control of the blockchain. Those type of things tend to centralize it. Or other people want to have one blockchain that's capable of doing everything and think that that's going to be the one and only blockchain. Whereas what we want to do is have decentralization through eliminating barriers to entry. The free market is the solution. It is freedom. Barriers to entry is what causes control and centralization. And so anything you can do to eliminate those barriers to entry increases competition, which increases the product provided to the end user.
I like that. So I have a question. Would it be possible to put a whole web presence on a blockchain?
Well, a blockchain is really geared toward an irreversible ledger. But what you can do is you can use technology similar to what MadeSafe is doing and have entirely decentralized hosting where you can turn your computer into a vending machine, a server. It's automatically serving up content for people. You can
dynamic content?
Dynamic content's a little bit trickier, but all the static content for certain can be generated. In fact, you can do a lot of stuff client-side on your computer. So imagine if Google made their entire database, all the index of the internet, available to your computer to download and do their own queries on. That's what you can do. That gives power to the individual, maintains your privacy, and prevents censorship.
Excellent. It's been really good having you on, Daniel. This has been Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends talking to Daniel Larimer from BitShares. You can go to bitshares.org. And our co-host today was Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker from badquaker.com. Say hi, Ben. Say worms.
Worms. Me and Michael at Porkfest.
Yep. Daniel, say worms. That's how we say goodbye.
Worms.
Worms. Cool, man. I really appreciate having you on. It was an honor.
See ya.
Meow. We say meow, too.
Meow.